Hello, and thanks for listening to JoJo's Bizarre Podcast. I am Mark DeVries, and I am joined, as always, by Miles Ma. Hi, Miles.
Let me just clap so you know when to... There you go.
Can you do a bigger clap closer to the mic?
Yeah.
That'll be good. I'm also joined by Jackie Jimenez.
Hi.
Hi, Jackie. I'm not starting over.
Okay.
The listeners can know that we clap to sync audio. We are a podcast that is mostly focused on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, but these days there isn't any new audiovisual JoJo content. So we've been watching animes that our listeners pick. And this week we watched the first four episodes of The Promised Neverland.
It's really good.
A 2019 anime.
You all should watch it.
We're on the bleeding edge of pop culture current anime.
Is this current?
I mean, it started a year ago.
Oh, I'm supposed to be... some of my coworkers are watching an anime, and I might watch it with them. So I'm going to maybe watch it. But I'm not going to talk about it on the podcast.
Okay. You will.
We'll see.
I'll bring it up, and then you'll be like, oh, I have to talk about it.
I'm trying to remember what the... the name is Wave, Listen to Me. So listeners, if you watch that, don't write to us about it, because I'm not going to talk about it on the pod. But you can tweet at me and tell me things, but no spoilers. Thank you. Bye.
You think people are just going to write in and tell us spoilers about a show?
No. I think what I'm hoping for is that someone will be like, oh, hey, I watched that. It's good. Or I'm watching that. Okay. And then we can just be friends on Twitter.
Yeah. Let Jackie know now if Listen to Me is
good.
Let
me know if it's trash so I can not watch it.
Yeah, exactly. If it's trash, be like, oh, I have a child. I have to go. Just make up something.
That's a long-term excuse, saying that you have a child. Like, you need to keep that going forever.
Yeah, but you never have to watch anime you don't like.
Okay.
So before we get into what happened in these Promised Neverland episodes.
Or you use the lie one time and then you're like, I don't know. I lost him.
that happened to me.
He got kidnapped.
That happened to me at a job a while ago. This girl... quit and cited one of her reasons was because her father had died. And then I don't remember how long later, a year and a half ago or something like that, she came by the store with her dad.
Oh, maybe she met her stepfather.
That's what I asked people, but people told me they were like, no, she said dad. And one of the managers was like, yeah, I remember talking to her because I lost my father a few years ago.
Oh wow.
I was like, oh, what did she then message people and be like, I was just kidding. Everybody knows that, right? I'm coming by.
Oh boy.
You guys can meet my dad.
Listeners,
maybe he came back. Some people come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listeners, write in and let us know what the biggest, baddest excuse you've ever given at work was.
And if you're the person who lied about your father, hi, how are you? It's good to talk to you. It's been a while. Okay. We here at JoJo's Bizarre Podcast like to engage with our, what is it called? Audience. So we take listener emails to an inbox that is...
Good Foley work there, Mark.
That is for, that is for jojosbizarrepod@gmail.com. You can write to us your thoughts there and we will read some or all of them. Try to keep them to the anime we talked about or that we announce we're talking about on Twitter, which is twitter.com/JJBpod, by the way. Or if you just have thoughts in general on JoJo, but you should listen to the podcast first and see if it's something we already addressed. Yeah.
But you don't have to.
You don't have to.
Because you don't, some people are going back and listening to every single podcast episode ever. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, it's true. Even if you write something that's been asked of us three times, we'll read it again.
Yeah.
But, also try and be creative. This section of the pod where we read emails is called
something different every week.
man, something orphanage.
Oh no.
Well, what?
Oh boy.
I was going to say auditory orphanage.
So you know how in the show, the kids don't write letters after they go away?
Yeah.
So this is how we know that our listeners are real and not being, eaten.
This is correspondence from Connie, who's dead.
because they keep writing in. Our listeners keep writing in more than once.
I'm going to have to put spoilers in the title of this episode.
Correspondence
from
Connie.
It is the first episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Listeners, watch this show.
Correspondence Corner today has emails.
All right, fine.
Several. This one is from Talia, and it goes like this. The subject line is Project Fleam.
Just bleep out the part where Miles says she's dead, okay? Just bleep that out.
I can.
Just in case. I think some people probably listen to the mail, and then they're like, fuck, I'll watch the anime later, yeah. You know? So we shouldn't put any spoilers in the beginning part.
Okay. So Carol and Tuesday reminds me of an anime or manga called Nana or Nana, which is about two girls named Nana who move in together, and one of them is in a band. Ana Tsuchiya does the opening for it, and this made me a fan of hers. I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is.
Also, Carol King and her daughter do the theme song to Gilmore Girls, which I think is about Jesus? I don't know.
The song is not Gilmore Girls.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm trying to think of a way to recommend Gilmore Girls that somehow connects it back to JoJo, but I got nothing. Okay. And a quick Google search shows that Araki has not talked about how Gilmore Girls is a great horror show, so there's no way I can recommend it for the pod.
Suspense.
But I will try again. Tali says that The Promised Neverland is one of the most tense mangas they've ever read. Just as a reminder, Dorohedoro is coming out on Netflix in America in about 2 weeks, and it's fucking batshit. I know I've recommended it before, but even if you don't watch it for the pod, I think y'all should still check it out.
We don't watch anime outside of this pod, except for this one that I'm watching.
That's right. We only watch extremely dry sports documentaries.
No, we don't.
We watched like the Last Dance docuseries, but on like third string NBA players that were in there for two games and then got injured or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing, Miles? Yeah. Did I sound like a sports person?
Yeah. There's a documentary series about Mark Madsen that you should all watch. 12th man for the Lakers.
Is it an anime?
No.
Damn it.
It should be an anime though. Isn't there a basketball anime?
Yeah.
What is it called?
I
was about to say Fruits Basket.
No, that's just something else.
Because that's what it's called when you shoot a banana from the three-point line, I think.
Mm.
Fruits Basket.
You don't want to read the postscripts?
Well, I'm looking up basketball anime because
okay.
I'm embarrassed.
We're
I know
off
people
on a tangent.
Are going to be like, isn't it Slam Dunk or something like that?
Is it Space Jam? Is Space Jam an anime?
Yeah.
To the
Space
Japanese,
Jam is an anime.
Because for any animation to them is anime.
I think we should watch Space Jam.
Wikipedia has an article called Basketball in Anime and Manga. Yeah, Slam Dunk, Kuroko's Basketball, Dash Kappe, Bass Squash. Okay, I'm done. Things are getting weird. Postscript. Has Araki ever made a musical reference to a Japanese band / musician / musical act?
I don't think so.
In part 8, there's... or maybe 7. In 7 or 8, there's a reference to a Japanese band. I don't know if it's the first one, because it's been a while since I read part 6, for instance, but yes, it has happened.
I'm going to watch a basketball anime. No, I won't.
No, you won't.
That was quite
a
turnaround.
I'm up to episode 9 of Carol and Tuesday because of you guys.
Oh.
We only watched one more episode.
We just watched one more, but it was a good one.
Yeah.
We should keep watching it. We should keep watching it, but now I want to keep watching. Mark wouldn't let me keep watching this one.
Yeah.
What's it called? Promised Neverland.
The one you like so much but forgot the name of.
I don't need to remember names. I remember
I'm
the important
fucking around.
Things. But I remember feelings, and I felt very sad. I almost cried that I couldn't keep watching it. Mark was like, no, for the pod.
You looked really sad.
Mark was like, I want to play games with my friends.
Well,
I'm like, all right, fine, play your video game.
We watched an episode of The Sopranos and then four anime episodes, and I was also like, I don't want to keep sitting here.
But I did. I wanted
and
to watch
I don't want you to watch it without me.
I wanted to watch all of it in one
and
sitting.
And then be on the podcast being like, oh, there's more coming. You don't even know about that yet.
I was like, what happens? I was like, there's no way. They're all going to die. They're all going
to
die.
By the way, this is a anime, I should say, that was suggested to us by Josh, a Patreon supporter. So thank you very much, Josh, for
thank
your
you.
Support and for the recommendation. But we'll talk about Patreon later. Who wants to read the next email?
I can read it.
Me.
Okay.
Oh.
You read it.
Fight it out.
Okay.
Mark just made
next
a Battle
email.
Ogre reference.
Yeah, I did.
Sorry, go ahead.
Is from Christian, and the subject line is, Giorno is great, you guys are just mean. Ow. Oh. Hey gang, writing in to pick up on the discussion of this past episode about Giorno's character. If you ask me, he's actually one of the best protagonists Araki has written. It's just that his character works off of a thing many people don't expect with JoJo, subtlety.
Subtlety.
That's subtlety. Now hear me out. Giorno's character arc involves him growing as a person by learning how to apply his stand in different and more diverse ways while making his calm and stoic bravado, not just that, a bravado. If you pay attention to some of Giorno's fights, you can see that while he's calm on the outside, his internal monologue is often frantic and expressive. At the beginning of GW, he's a kid who's trying to be a gangster, but he's actually in way over his head. Also, the fact that he's Jonathan and Dio's son is actively woven into his personality, in that he's got a strong sense of justice, but is absolutely merciless to his enemies. If you ask me, people give Araki too much shit because as his manga career has gone on, he's improved a lot with storytelling and character growth, but people don't look past the surface-level appeal of, haha, this is bizarre and memeable, but that's all for now. Let me know what you guys think. Thank you, Christian. I like that it's bizarre. That's the appeal to me, that it's bizarre and memeable.
I do also agree.
A big part of the appeal.
Yes, I do also agree with Christian, though. Particularly in 7, I think people start to note that the writing itself is actually better.
Wow, good.
But it is also bizarre and meme-worthy. But I will say, Christian, I hear what you're saying, but I still do feel like there's projection happening here, which is fine. It's sort of like the Mary Sue effect. But, you know, when you say he's got a strong sense of justice, but is absolutely merciless to his enemies, I mean, that could describe almost every JoJo protagonist.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I guess you could argue that Jotaro doesn't care about justice, but, I mean, he kind of does.
I can see the point that he was making. I still disagree, or I don't know. I want more. I wanted more out of Giorno.
Well, that's the thing is that it's just like whether or not you feel as though the character made the choices that his ancestors would make. The point is that we feel like it was lost potential because we wanted there to be story elements where we see the character address, you know, their lineage being from Dio and kind of from Jonathan, and that didn't happen.
Or just
so even if the character's deeper than we give him or Araki credit for, yeah, we're still disappointed.
If there was character development there and it was super subtle, I think it was too subtle, like way too subtle. And you know, I don't like it when things like beat you over the head with, oh, look at this character, look at the change that this character is going through, right? But you know, there's an in between there, and but thank you for writing that. You did point out some things that I hadn't really thought about or noticed, so appreciate it.
Fine.
What?
I'm kidding, Miles.
Trying to be nice.
Miles.
What?
Read the next email.
Miles just read an email.
I just read the last email,
Mark,
you dummy.
Mark, leave Miles alone.
Oh my God, my brain.
I gotta read it. This one is from Mouth of Hadar, and the subject line is 81.25% JoJo by volume. Hey, JJB Pod. Last ep, you wondered how many episodes of the podcast are actually JoJo at this point. You'll be glad to know that there are 143 episodes where the main topic is JoJo media and only 33 where it's not. That's 81.25% JoJo. Even if you upload every single week, if you have at least 2 years before JoJo episodes become the minority. And there's no way part 6 will take that long, right? Haha, right? Thank you for doing the math.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I am glad to hear that we're more than 4/5 JoJo.
I think after 2 years, then we have, if there is no part 6, then we need to, like, I don't know. We'll
change the name.
We'll revisit. No. I think we should, like, revisit JoJo in some different way. Or we can do more of, like, the theme episodes.
Yeah.
We can do more theme episodes.
Yeah. We did a pet episode. Did we do a dad's one? I forget what we haven't. We didn't do the dad's one. We did sex. We did sex and dogs.
Right.
We did not do the two together.
We didn't do dads? Oh, we got to do dads for Father's Day.
We did dads.
We could do a mom's one for Mother's Day. Although I think this is the mom's episode. As listeners, you will learn about later.
And we're only a week away from a week past Mother's Day. So
yeah,
this is our Mother's Day episode. We've decided.
Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to mom in this episode, in this show.
Yeah. Don't sell your children to aliens.
We don't know what they are. 81.25%
JoJo by volume should be, if we made t-shirts, that should be on the t-shirt.
No, but then the number's going to change with every new episode we make.
Yeah, we'll make a new t-shirt every week.
Oh, okay.
Oh, every week. With a slight decimal changing. We would just like write over it with a marker because no one's buying them.
We should just update our Twitter profile with the ratio every week.
Oh, man. I'm not doing that.
Okay. Neither am I.
Okay. I will read an email. This is an email from Arthur entitled More Throwback Than Usual. Hey, guys. Writing from December 2018, but I just remembered something I thought was weird from part 4. Why doesn't Josuke have any friends? Jonathan grew up a whiny rich kid who got picked on and whose only positive relationships were actively sabotaged. Joseph shows up in New York pretty much right before part 2 starts, and he makes a friend immediately, despite being an overconfident hotshot asshole. Love Joseph, by the way. Best JoJo easily. Jotaro seems pretty popular at the start of part 3, but he also appears to hate everyone, and then he leaves for Egypt anyway, so it makes sense that we don't see any old friends of his. But Josuke has lived in Morio his whole life, and the few of his schoolmates we see at least seem to know who he is, but I don't think we see any evidence that he knows anyone in this town that we didn't see him meet, besides his mom and grandpa. Then one of the first people he does meet tries to obliterate him, but an hour later they're BFFs who do everything together all the time. I don't know, it just feels weird to me is all. Anyway, thanks as always, Arthur. P.S. Don't worry, Miles, I got the good feathers joke you've forgotten about.
What, you think I'm a clown? Something funny to you about that joke?
You're right on the money, Miles. Everyone knows the reference you're making. It's actually a terrible, terrible impression. You got nothing wrong.
Come on.
Yeah, I think the reason why these characters all start without friends is it's just sort of like, I'm not someone who's like well-versed in classic literature enough to say this properly, but I guess it's like the Odyssey kind of effect, or just any sort of hero's journey. Like, we don't need to know about their social life and complicate it with their existing social ties. So it's like they meet everyone on the journey, you know? Otherwise, I was going to say this anime uniquely is about weird young men with special powers learning to make friends for the first time. But I think this is just a thing because, yeah, usually these characters are going on an odyssey. They're traveling across, you know, distant lands. And so we see them meet people for the first time. What do you think about that, Miles? Writer?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It is, and honestly, I'd never thought about Josuke not having any friends, but it's a great point, Arthur.
They all kind of don't seem that social. Like, they don't really seem like they have that much of a, none of them do.
That's what, Arthur's saying, yeah.
Josuke is popular with the ladies, though. He has all those girls who follow him and look at his hair.
They're all popular with the ladies. That's the thing. They're all kind of loners. They don't really have like a best friend, but like people like them. Like they're popular, but they're lonely.
Yeah.
And then when a season starts and you meet a JoJo, it's like their life gets all flipped, turned upside down.
Yeah.
After they learn about stands or they meet their long lost relative or whatever it is.
Yeah. It would be cool to see a JoJo where we just jump in the middle and everything is fine and they have a relationship and they have friends and family, and then stands or whatever fucks everything up.
Come on.
Actually, that kind of... Anyway.
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing I can talk about.
All right. Don't talk about it then.
Don't talk about it. Yeah, but it is funny because Morio is like... It's a town, you know, he's from Morio, but we first see him in Nagasaki or something where you'd be like, oh, he must have friends at home. It's like, no, this is where he grew up. We never leave. He just hangs out with his hot mom all day and sister.
And grandpa.
Oh, right.
And dog.
Yeah. Okay. He's got friends.
Just hangs out with his dog. What more do you need?
A dog is a
dog.
Yeah, police.
No, that's
Josuke. That's Koichi's dog.
That's Koichi's dog.
Oh, oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, your fave character, Koichi.
Yeah, some might say dogs are a man's best friend. You know?
No.
I just thought of that.
I read the next one.
Okay.
There's spoilers. Be careful.
Yeah, actually, don't.
Okay.
Get out of there.
There's spoilers?
Yeah, it says spoilers in big letters. This email is from LJ Draws, and it's titled, I Draw Maybe Too Much. Hi, JJBA Pod Crew. I am from Australia and caught up on your awesome podcasts in 3 months. Thank you.
Wow.
I listen to your podcast while drawing and reading JoJo. Spoilers. Speaking of JoJo, Mark, sorry if I spelt your name wrong. You did. It's Mark with a C. I have a theory for part 8, basically. And basically asking if a character from a previous arc is the type of being present in a later arc. And I say maybe. It's a little bit thin. A little bit thin of a connection, but I see what you were going for. And listeners will never know.
Nope. This is just between you and this person, LJ.
By the way, if you find Crunchyroll annoying, you could try Anime Lab. Thanks for being such a great podcast. Also, I have a recommendation for an anime. What do you think about watching Haikyuu, an anime about volleyball? Just a thought, though. I can't wait for your next episode from LJ Draws. P.S. Every time I close my eyes, I wake up feeling like I need to go back to sleep because I draw until late. One of my drawings.
Get some rest, baby.
You go to sleep.
Man, this is some kind of pen and marker JoJo-ish drawing. I'll show Jackie
it's
here.
It's quirky. I see it.
Oh, you see it? You dodged the spoilers and scrolled?
Yes.
Impressive.
I know how to not read and read.
I will say that last week, Miles almost spoiled season 3 of The Sopranos, and I managed to edit it out without hearing it.
Wow, amazing.
Oh, way to go, dude.
Yeah, I just like looked at the sound wave and was like, I think this is what where he says stuff. And so I just muted it and moved on.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wow. You've become the one. You could just read the sound waves. You're like Neo.
Yeah. That's kind of true. I'm pretty impressive. Who wants to read the last
one? I'm going to read the next one. This is from Josh. The subject line is Promised Neverland. Yo, JJBP crew.
Yo.
Glad you guys got to see this anime. It's a series that I started after hearing a few things about it, and I went in mostly blind after it won 2 awards at the Crunchyroll Awards. It won Best Fantasy Series, and Isabella, or Mama, was voted Best Villain of the Year. Happy Mother's Day, Mama.
Oh, boy.
Even from 4 episodes, you may be able to tell why. I came out of the series very pleasantly surprised at how good it was, and I'm excited for the rumored second season. I'm still listening through the backlog again, and this is just a small gripe that can never be fixed or changed, but oh man, Mark keeps calling Diamond is Unbreakable the third season, even though it's the 4th, but still, very good listening. I'm just at the episode where you guys got the art that you use for the episode icons and all that, and I was wondering what character you'd like to be drawn as if you got another one, now that you've seen part 5 and the rest of part 3 since then. Thank you for taking my money in exchange for a podcast episode, Josh. P.S. Carol and Tuesday won Best Score at the Crunchyroll Awards. P.P.S. Should I have my friends read the part 6 manga so that they can also then read 7 and 8? Or tell them to wait until after the part 6 anime has aired. 7 and 8 are at least 4 years away, anime-wise, after all, if the current trend continues.
That's a tough question, because the fear is that you read part 6 and then they're like, announcing part 6 anime. But it's possible with the current pandemic sitch.
Yeah.
That it's delayed even longer.
Yeah, so have them all read it now so they'll forget it by the time like a year or two passes.
Yeah, they can just read it now. I would say that's probably the best way to go. Yeah. I did not make a mistake about what season this is, by the way, because you may not recall that season 1 is both parts 1 and 2 together.
So there's seasons and there's parts.
Correct.
Hmm.
So Season one is fucking Phantom Blood and Battle Tendency. Season two is Stardust Crusaders, even though they did take a bit of a break because it was an extremely long, like 40-episode season. And then season three is Diamond is Unbreakable. Season four is part five, Golden Wind. So nice try, but you got to try again because I am never wrong.
Send your hate mail to, what is it? What's our email?
mark@rocketmail.com.
No. Oh. JoJo'sBizarrePod@gmail.com. Is that it?
That is it.
That's it, you guys. I've heard Mark say it enough that I, and without trying to remember it, I remember it.
Very good. Great job.
Yay. Well, there was another thing that Josh said. Hold on.
Oh, the icons. Wondering what character you'd like to be drawn as if you got another one now that you've seen part five and the rest of part three since then.
Ugh.
I was going to say, what about part four? But I forgot we went in a fucked up order.
We started with part four and then went backwards.
Yeah. What character would you like to be drawn? I don't know. I like staying as Josuke. I'm fine with that. I don't know if there's anybody in part five that I like aesthetically or feel a kindred spirit with.
Who's the one with the purple hair and lips?
Abakio?
I could be drawn as Abakio.
Okay. I would like to be... Is it Abakio Stand who's the sexy VHS spirit?
Yes.
Yes.
The
yes.
fucking answering machine? I don't want to be that, but I just wanted to remember it. So I said it out loud. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Miles, do you have any characters that you would prefer to be depicted as?
I like Bruno's bob and lace tits.
I'm picturing you with a real world bob and I hate it.
I think it could work.
It could work with Miles' hair type, but I don't like it. I don't like thinking about it.
I think, Miles, you need to be a villain. You're not allowed to be True. A good person.
Yeah, you're evil, dude.
I think I'm fine sticking with Kira.
Yeah, I would still like to be Joseph.
Yeah, those are good choices. Anyway, we mentioned...
Oh, you know what? Yukako.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I would like to be Yukako. I think that'd be cool.
Okay. That's a good change. Then we're all part four.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Which one were you?
I'm Josuke.
Because
my hair is weird. We have a Patreon. It's you just go to patreon.com/JJBpod. It's hot in here. We have three tiers, but every bit helps. There's a $1 tier for which you get my undying gratitude and you get to read Miles's newsletters every week where he compiles a link to all of the things that we reference from pop culture and non-pop culture. There's some obscure shit in there.
Miles, don't miss the Fresh Prince reference.
Okay.
We also have a $3 tier, which helps three times as much financially, if you can do the math. But if you spend $3, we'll read your name like this. I want to say thank you to Austin, Celeste, Chad, Christian, Josh, Kevin, Martin, Michael, Nick, Tim, and Tyler. And no one else. Lastly, there is a $20 tier that you only have to do one time, but we will watch an anime of your choosing if you pledge just 1 month, at least 1 month. Okay. Do you guys want to take a break? I have to turn on the AC and okay. I drank a lot of water. Okay. It's time to talk about the anime we watched 4 episodes of this week. Entitled The Promised Neverland.
It's good.
Jackie has tipped her hand about how she feels about this anime.
I like it a lot, but I haven't finished it, obviously, because Mark won't let me.
That's right. The Promised Neverland is based on a manga of the same name, written by Kayu Shirai, which is a pen name. Nobody knows who this person is.
What?
And illustrated by someone named Posuka Demizu.
Can they find that person?
Yeah. She's done... like an interview and has photos Mystery. Taken and stuff. Has green hair, last I saw.
Oh.
The Promised Neverland first came out in Weekly Shonen Jump August 1st, 2016. And it actually somehow was released in English at the same time as the Japanese one via Viz's, Viz Media's like online thingy, which that's news to me. I've never heard of that happening. And yeah, this anime came out between during the months of January to March last year, 2019. And there was a second season planned for this October, but due to events happening in this world today, it's been pushed to January of next year, 2021.
Wait, what has been pushed?
Second season.
Aw, okay.
Not going to January. So we got to stretch it out, Jackie. We can only watch one episode a
week. Mark, no. We're going to binge all of it like tonight.
No, I have things to do.
We have completely different like binge watching. I want to binge everything. Mark wants to watch one episode a night for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I don't like sitting and in I'll the never same place see the ending. For a while, and I like having time to think about stuff.
I don't. I just want to know the answer.
And then I get FOMO. I see people talking in the chats and on the web making posts and stuff, you know, and I got to get in there.
Mark needs to go play video games with his friends.
I've got to jump in the fray. So
that's okay.
Episode one, they, by the way, can I just say the opening song, the OP, is like pretty good. I love that it has that wailing saxophone in it.
I don't like it.
Right after it starts. Why don't you like it?
I don't know. I don't even remember it. I just wrote down that it sucks.
Well, I love the saxophone part in it. The rest, I'm not sure how I feel about it, but there's like a wailing sax with like an 80s kind of reverb on it, and it's good. But I wasn't sure what kind of show it would be.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you know what show it is after episode one, you're like, this OP is sort of deceitful. Like, what the fuck is this?
I was thinking maybe two things. There's two things like the title brought to my attention. One, I'm thinking the Promised Land, which isn't that like Jews out of Egypt, like Israel,
yep.
Right? So maybe biblical. Oh, I don't know. And Neverland, which is Peter Pan's hometown.
Yeah, his hometown.
So I thought maybe it had something to do with like a place where you never grow up, which is true.
Isn't it Never Neverland or is it just Neverland?
I think it's called Neverland. They say Never Never, but it's Neverland.
What's on the town documentation?
Oh boy.
What are you talking about? Okay, fine. Know. But I think Neverland is appropriate because it is a place where they never grow up.
It's true.
They can't grow up.
Yeah, by the way, spoilers for this anime. We kind of mentioned it in the beginning, but...
You find this out in the first episode.
In the first episode, you get the gist of the story, which we'll talk about in a second.
There's a twist in the first episode.
Which I was happy about, because the beginning, first half of this episode, I was like, I don't care about these kids.
I was interested.
What is this shit?
I was like, there's a mystery here. What did you think, Miles?
So the first 15 minutes, I was also like impatient. I was like, what is the sinister thing that's underlying all of, because it's just like kids playing tag for like 15 minutes and it totally delivered and then some with how dark the twist was.
Yeah, it was darker than I expected. I was like, nice.
I knew there was gonna be, I didn't think it was gonna be that dark, but I knew something mysterious was happening, because it's like, okay, you're keeping these kids like captive for some reason and they think it's like nice and fun, but there's something up here, because there's never, I don't know. The anime would be boring if it was a boring secret.
Oh, you know? Well, yeah. I mean, at first I thought Norman was evil just because his eyes are never fully open. He always has like half open eyes, like he's stoned. And I was just like, he looks evil. So does Mama. Mama eventually, though, turns out to be evil. And then when I started to realize like, okay, they're being taken somewhere at that gatehouse, I thought we'd just see like evil dudes who are frowning, being mean, taking her away. And then she was dead. And I was like, that's cool. I was like, all right, child murder. And then there were demons. And I was like, the show's good.
Yeah, they're called demons. I think they're aliens. Miles also mentioned aliens. I think it seems like aliens, but who knows?
I mean, they say demons. Who knows where the demons will come from?
I think they're aliens.
You know, there could be some from the sea, a la Pacific Rim.
The kids have numbers on their necks to identify them.
Yeah, they kind of look like hardcore gangbangers, because they have this sort of like gothic font neck tattoo. It's pretty awesome, but it is sort of weird, and it does clash with the sort of like nice, like, ha ha ha, we love each other, we're all orphans together in this wonderful mansion, Mom, I love you. And you are just kind of like, what's the deal with those numbers. Couldn't they have done like a softer script?
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that you could lie to the kids about and be like, "Don't." It doesn't look mean. It's that this is what everyone does.
Graphic designers write in and tell us what the font for these tattoos should have been.
Yeah, it's true. It is kind of, but I think like these kids are being raised from when they're very little to be at this orphanage, so they'll kind of believe whatever you tell them. Like,
it's true.
Know?
Are they giving 5-year-old kids these tattoos?
They're probably the infant babies probably get this tattoo.
Ouch!
Which is a weird thing to do because then it would stretch. Yeah. Yeah, so what did I write here? I wrote that Connie's face is fucked up. Connie is a 6-year-old?
She's cute.
Her mouth is too far up her face next to her eyes. It was weird.
She's cute.
If you say so. Connie, basically, there's like 38 for a little while. There's 38 kids living in an orphanage. And what we know about them that we slowly reveal is just that at 12, they all have to leave the orphanage.
No matter what.
No matter what, which is kind of like, okay, I guess that's
at
like...
At 12, they get like adopted, quote unquote. Well, that's what they think.
They get like, yeah, they can get adopted earlier, but at 12, they have to leave the house. I guess the idea is being like, whatever state this is in, they only let you live in the orphanage until you're 13 or 12 mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think a lot of this episode is boring at first because they want us to know everybody's names.
It's not boring.
Well, it's okay.
You find it boring.
Correct.
I think it's sweet.
Well, I'm a solipsist.
And mysterious. It's mysterious.
It did take us like a good 5+ minutes to figure out who Emma was because they used the name Emma while like cutting around to different kids' faces. And so I was like, no, that's Emma.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I think Emma has the red hair, you know. It seems to mainly be focused on this girl, Emma, who is 11 years old.
It's the three kids. It's the three kids that all get a perfect score. Emma, Norman, and Ray.
Ray.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's mostly Emma, though. I feel like she's in the most scenes.
Well, Emma is like the sweet, idealistic person that's kind of driving... Like, without her, the story would be very different. You know, like she's the one who's like, we need to save everybody. And, you know, whereas the other two boys, one of them is very practical and like, we got to save ourselves. And the other one is also very smart, somewhat practical, but he's a little bit more kind of in the middle. And we find out that he likes Emma. So he wants to make her happy. And so he'll follow along with her somewhat idealistic, kind of impossible feat task. But I think that like if they can't save everybody, they'll save themselves or save who they can.
Yeah.
You know? But they're like kind of like shoot for the moon.
Right. So they learn they have
land
to
land on the stars.
Oh yeah, by the way, so there's this girl, Connie, we mentioned before. She has a totally normal face.
She's a little girl, little She's cute
little
baby.
A little girl with the name of a 60-year-old woman.
They all have like old school Western names. Who's named Norman?
At one point they're like, oh, we have to talk to Don and Gilda, and I thought she'd go to meet like two like 70-year-old people that look like they're in my family.
There's
they sound like they're from New York City.
There's people our age named Don.
Yeah
Where? Oh, name one.
I know I've met people named Don
Lemon, CNN correspondent.
He's young.
Yeah, but people on TV news are like aliens, you know.
I know people named Don.
I don't know a single one. Are you thinking of the Ninja Turtle with the purple headband?
No.
Oh, okay.
I know people named Don. Gilda, I do not know anybody with that name except for the Good Witch of the East.
Or Gilda Radner.
I don't know who that is.
Rip. She was a Saturday Night Live player.
Okay.
Funny person. Comedian. That's what that's called. Yeah, they've all got oldie names, and this girl Connie also has a stuffed bunny. This is important. It's half her size, and its name is Little Bunny.
In English.
And I kept thinking it would speak every Aww. Time, because they kept trying to make it important by, like, you know, isolating it in the frame, and I was like, I really want the bunny to have a deep voice. But the bunny never spoke. Because I didn't know what this was about. I thought maybe there were fantasy elements, and so I'm like, does this doll talk? There is, oh man, I wish I wrote down what it was, but there was one moment where they just like stop for a second, and they're like, anyway, as we all know, we get adopted, but we could also at turn 12 and then we leave the house. Mama is our matriarch, you know, who runs this place. Like, they just stop for a second and just break it all down for you.
Mm.
Which, you know, was not totally unwelcome.
Dude, what's the story for them in terms of the tests? Like, what are they told about why they take those tests and stuff?
I don't know why what they're told about them, but the significance of the test is that, like, if you score low enough on it, then you get shipped off to be eaten by these demons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically, if you didn't know, all the time, if you didn't figure it out by now, all the times that the kids are being quote-unquote adopted or leaving when they're 12, they're being given to these giant, evil, alien, demon creatures that they look, they all look a little bit different.
They look like the alien from Alien.
No.
Yes, they do.
They do not look like xenomorphs.
They do.
Absolutely not.
Miles, what do you think they look like?
I don't think they look like xenomorphs.
Ugh,
I right. think they look a little like they're a little bit like miniature angels from Eva.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
But goopier, maybe? I don't know.
Goopier.
It's just that first one, they show this big eye rolling around, and then it has two eyes that are, like, vertically aligned. I was like, what am I looking at? I thought it was a suit for a second. Anyway, so they're not supposed to leave the gate. You know, it's one of those orphanages. We should have mentioned that they're kind of held captive. You know, they're just told, oh, it's dangerous beyond the gate.
Right.
Sort of like the movie Dogtooth or Wolfpack or, you know, insert movie where the kids are told not to leave the premises, although they're not told there's no outside world. Anyway,
they're just told it's dangerous. They're little kids. Like, little kids are supposed to be kind of regulated, like
sheltered.
They like any little kid that, you know, they can't just go off.
Yeah,
you know,
I'll
on their
I'll
own
tell you
somewhere.
What though, if you told people the truth, if you told people now today that there are demons out there trying to eat you, we'd all stay quarantined, self-quarantined a lot better. Anyway, so basically they take Connie, who's 6 years old, out, you know, and you're like, oh, she's being adopted. But she leaves. At some point, they find that she left Little Bunny
and
somewhere.
She loves Little Bunny. She can't go off with her new family without Little Bunny. So Emma and Norman go after her with the bunny to, like, try to give it to her, even though, you know, Emma and Mama are way ahead.
They're outside the fence. Yeah,
they're outside the fence. So Emma and Norman are like, well, let's break the rules together, you know, and, like, let's beg for forgiveness after the fact. So they go together and they see, like, there's, like, this tunnel beyond the fence. There's, like, a tunnel and there's a truck, and they see the truck. They figure this is the truck where Connie is being, you know, she's boarding this truck.
Comfortably and, transported.
Right. And transported off to her new family, or whatever. But they look around and they don't see anybody. And then Emma sees something in the back of the truck, and she's staring at it like, oh my God. I think she screams a little bit. I don't know. She probably,
I don't think so.
I hope she's quiet. But she's like, oh, what the fuck? And then Norman comes to, like, see, and they both, and then they reveal it, and it's Connie, very dead.
Very dead.
She looks like she got dried up like a raisin. Like they sucked the water out of her or something to preserve her. And
yes, like Greek yogurt.
And she has like a flower
stuck in her. Yeah, I don't know what was up with that. That
she's
was
like
weird.
Like a red flower stuck in her for some reason. But that's very scary, and it was very good.
Yeah, then they hear people coming out and they hide under the truck, I guess. And we hear kind of how this whole process works, and these demons, because we hear them talking, and they're talking about how this girl is pretty young, and they're talking about ages and test scores and shit. And basically what we learn is that they are picking these kids to eat them, that they are mm-hmm. meat. This is a harvest of some kind.
It's a farm. They call it a farm.
That's right. Yeah. A harvest might only refer to vegetation. At some point, the kids get a peek, and yeah, they're these big, horrible creatures we already described, and one of them, like, sort of extracts Connie from the van, from the truck, using his hand, and puts her into, I think, some kind of, like, liquid thing.
Yeah.
You don't really see it.
Or, like, some frozen container or something.
Yeah, like a magic bullet. And
they say that they're it's high quality meat for the rich. These guys are like, we would never eat something like this. This is high quality meat for the rich. So I don't know what meat they're eating.
Yeah, can we explore the class struggle of the demons, please?
Yeah, right?
I want to know about these people eaters.
I want to know about the working demon.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does a working demon eat?
There's a bunch of political metaphors in this show. Yeah, so they're horrified at understanding everything they're understanding and seeing these demons and the dead friend. And then you hear one of them being like, I smell something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The kids run away.
They run. And they're like, are we food? They're like, what the fuck did we just see? Like, but they're children. So they say, oh, my God. You know, like, they're not like, what? But if they were adults, they'd be like, what the fuck?
Well, we don't speak Japanese. They could have been cursing up a storm. Who knows?
I don't know how to express myself. Like, that emotion, I don't know how to express it not by saying, what the fuck? Like, that's the only thing I can say.
You could just go, oh, my God. Just if you say, oh, my God, it feels good. And so they kind of start deducing. And that's what a lot of the show is about the kids strategizing and kind of reading the other people's plays.
Right. Also, while they were there, while they witnessed this, you know, they heard these working class demons talking about the farm and the meat for the rich and stuff. Mom was there. So they're like, oh, fuck, mom is in on this. Like, whatever it is. Like, mom is setting us up to be eaten. And she's lying to us. Scary.
Yeah.
The show's cool because it's so easy to imagine, like, what you would do in this situation. Because the kids don't, like, the kids are very, like, Ray and Norman are very smart and Emma's very athletic. But otherwise, they're just normal people who are put in this, like, situation where they can't trust anyone. Like, the scenario is, like, obviously horrendous and over the top. But, like, the actions that the kids have to take are very realistic. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so tense and terrifying.
Yeah, it's not about like a specific profession, like a spy having to do something else with their whole war situation. I don't know. Yeah, it's universal, the idea of being cared for as a kid, but you're not really being cared for. You're being groomed to be eaten.
Scary. It's a free range farm. Like they treat the children like fairly well before they like, you know. So it's like kind of ethical, right? Like if you're gonna eat. Yeah. If you're going to eat people, like, might as well let them live happy lives until they're 12 or stupid, whatever comes first.
Yeah.
These are organic children.
Yeah. Organic, free range, cruelty-free children.
Is this a vegan? Is this like some like vegan messaging here where it's
That's
like organic food doesn't mean it's like, you know, you're still killing them.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
Something to chew on. Anyway, that's pretty much
good.
Where episode one ends.
No, it ends when mom finds the rabbit.
Yes. So Mama, also known as Isabella, finds...
Isabella's her real name. Mama is what they call her because she's like their mom.
Mama!
They all feel like they're siblings.
Yeah, she finds Little Bunny because they didn't put Little Bunny with Connie's dead body. They didn't bring it back to where they found it. Mm-hmm. They left it somewhere in the outer... parts of the property.
Yeah, because they ran away in a panic.
So they know, yeah, so Mama's like, what the fuck is Bunny doing out here? Someone must have brought her. And it's a little bit of a jump. You could just assume that the kids were playing with Little Bunny or something, but...
It seemed pretty, like, that ending was scary. Like,
because
there was,
scary.
Like, scary music and
yeah,
it was
a bit of a musical sting and, yeah.
Yeah.
With her half-open eyes, because she's been sharing blunts with Norman. episode two
starts with Mark setting the table.
It starts with someone named Mark, and I was like, shit, Mark has a dumb haircut. I'm upset. Is this when they loop in Ray, or do they do that already in episode one?
They have not looped in Ray yet, and episode two is when they do it. This is when they start to so Norman tells Emma to act normal because she's still freaking out, and he's like, you gotta act normal, we gotta pretend like we don't know anything, like we're just happy kids like we are. And they figure out, like, okay, so they were talking about age is the quality, like a fine wine, like, you know, or whatever, like aged meat, where 12 is the best. And and they haven't gotten shipped yet. Like, they're kind of reasoning everything together. They haven't gotten shipped yet because they have great scores. So I think it's like, if you have really good scores, they want to keep aging you so that you're like perfect, like, hopefully, if you continue to have great scores year after year, then you can become like the perfect like S grade meat or whatever. But as soon as you're,
because the brains are what makes it delicious,
right? Because they figure that out, that the brains, having a big, nice, juicy, developed brain,
nice wrinkly brain, nice full of facts,
developed brain makes you delicious.
I like how when they found that out, there were like all these quick cuts of their heads. I was like, oh, so that is a brain. Okay, it's in there.
And yeah, so they kind of realize how that works. But you know, if your grades start to go down, then they start shipping people off in order from lowest scores to highest scores.
Do you think there's any questions that happen to be like, I would taste best with chive butter, mm-hmm. or whatever, and they're like, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with my intelligence.
There's pairings, like, you know, right. You know, children of this age who like science are best paired with.
If I was on a dinner table, like, you know, what yeah. would I be next to?
Yeah.
Am I a grass-fed orphan or something else?
Yeah.
So
they talk about like, okay, we're going to escape during the day. Let's go out to see what's beyond the fence. So they go out to see what's actually beyond the fence to see like what that would look like when they escape. And there's just a big wall.
A giant 3 or 4 meter thick, like stone wall.
And it's very smooth, so they can't like
unlike
climb
their brains
easily. Yeah. But people have climbed big walls before. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Mark, the little boy from the beginning with Mark's name.
Yes.
When the bell rings, all the kids have to run back to mama. And Mark comes running back and he's crying and he's like, I lost Nyla. We got separated. And mama pulls something out of her pocket. It's a compass. She looks at it and then she's like, you don't need to worry. I know where she is. I'll find her.
But we also see that it does have like a radar.
Oh, I missed that part. I was writing something down.
Right. Do we see that, Miles? We see the radar?
I don't think so. I think she just, it looks like a compact, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
it's something that opens purse. Clasp. I may have imagined something.
But I don't think you see into it, no.
Yeah. So the mom finds her and they realize that they're all tracked and they have a tracking device.
Because she found her immediately. She's just like, I'll get her. And
she just walks in one direction and then comes back in that same direction.
And they also, they realize like, oh, mama wanted whoever, because mama knows that some of the kids know the secret and mama wanted us to see that she can keep track of us.
Yeah, I guess it's like, don't try to fucking escape, because I will, I'll know where you are.
I'll find you.
It's like a scary threat.
And they realize, okay, so there must be tracking devices in our bodies. And they spend a good chunk of time being like, where would they be in our bodies? And Miles, where did your mind go right off the bat?
What? Why are you asking me?
I'm just curious. I don't want to tee you up by saying where we thought.
That's not what I thought.
I was wondering about it, but I did not come to any conclusion.
Okay, because I was saying...
You do not speak for me, Mark.
I was saying the ear. That's what I was thinking.
Really?
I was thinking of butts. Way to go, I was thinking immediately. I was like, it's in their butt. They put the tracking device in their butt.
I think it would be bad to put it in the butt because it would be too easy to knock it out. You know? Like, if it's in the butt. Like, things are coming out of there
what
all the time.
In the butt?
It's true. It is a high traffic locale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want some place that they're not going to pick at, they're not going to look at, they're not going to notice, you know? So like behind the ears, the armpit.
Armpit's good.
I think armpit.
Or the leg pit behind your knee.
Leg pit's good.
Middle of the back.
Behind the head, back of the head.
Yeah. I don't know. These are all places that I touch all the time. I think part of this is because I wash myself. In the shower?
We don't do that.
What?
I'm kidding. I think
we don't wash here. We're disgusting.
I think back of the head is good because they're not going to look there and you always need your head. Like you can lose an arm, you can lose a leg, but you're always going to need your head.
Right.
You know?
God only made one.
And the brain is the tastiest part. So you really want to track the head.
The problem with that though, Jackie, is that when anime characters feel sheepish, they put their hand behind their head with their elbow sticking way up in the air as they laugh nervously. So they would probably find it.
Mm. It's got to be deep in the skull. Put it in the skull.
They could also put them in like their fancy shoes that they're all wearing. They're like their Red Wing branded shoes.
That'd be too easy to take off, you know, too easy to...
Yeah, but they can't. You can't go far without your fancy shoes.
That's true.
No, then they would. We'd see like a Great Escape style montage where they make shoes out of like duct tape and toilet paper or something. They know at one point that they wear all white because it makes it easier to show dirt, which I thought was interesting because in a way that can sort of show if you've been dirty and unclean, but can also show that you've been wandering off the grounds, because if you're going through the forest or other parts of the wilderness that are on the outside of the property, you'll get dirty. So it's kind of a good way to keep track of the kids. I thought that was a cool detail. They check out a new baby that has come in.
Well, that's not even this episode. I think that's next episode.
But that's how they figure out where the tracking device is, isn't it?
Yes. But that's not this episode.
Oh, okay.
They're out. Emma and Norman meet out in the like woods, like beyond the fence, to talk about their secret escape. And they're like, we should tell Ray. I think we can trust him and he can help us. And they're like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's tell Ray. And Norman's like, you should let me talk to him. And then Ray's like, hey guys, Ray like followed them into the woods. And so they tell,
he specifically says, yo.
Yeah, he does.
Yo.
And so they explain it to Ray and Ray is like, you know, there's nothing out there, right? And he gets very like pessimistic and very like realistic and very like practical.
He's like, anyway, who can we save? I think some people have physical ability. And Emma is like, no, we take everyone. And he's like, that's ridiculous. We can't do this. Is basically just like two types of people who play strategy RPGs like XCOM or Fire Emblem, where you're like, I don't want anyone to die. And other people who are like, yeah, it's gonna happen. Fuck it, move on.
Oh no.
You know, and it is kind of true. Like, if you're trying to track like kids, you know, in the forest, and you're like, well, there's a gaggle of people in the fucking woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be hard for 38 people, well, 37 now, to move quietly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a worthwhile conversation they have. But eventually, Emma gets her way by being like, nope, I will not be a part of this plan if it involves any sort of calculated casualties. We make sure everyone is ready, and I'm not helping or whatever if we're not going to do that.
And
which
Norman,
is also like, yes, you are. You have no choice, but whatever.
Well, and Norman is like, well, all right, let's try it. And then Ray is like, are you fucking serious? And they're like, yeah, and you can't do this shit by yourself without our help. And he's like, you're right.
Yeah, and Norman is like, I knew Emma was going to do that. And you know what? I didn't want to say no because I like her.
Mm-hmm.
I like her. And Ray's like, you're fucking weird, dude. I don't know what he says. I don't know, Jackie, I feel like I have notes in here at least, because they talk about a tracking device and they're like, well, they don't know exactly where we are, or something like that, about there not being any tracking devices in the buildings, that they have to be on their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's like, well, there's no tracking devices in the house. I looked. And I was like, what?
Yeah. He was saying like there was no, I think it was Norman said there's no cameras and no, there's no listening or video devices in the, nothing like
ridiculous,
that here. I looked.
Ridiculous leap to conclusion.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you're a child. Okay. You know nothing of the espionage world.
Mm-hmm. They don't teach you that in school.
Like I do. They base the Gene Hackman movie, The Conversation, on me, actually. Mm-hmm. And you know how they hide microphones and stuff. And yeah, there's fucking demons. You know, there's demons. Maybe they have demon listening devices, you know, like some kind of fleshy diamond that floats through the walls. You have no idea.
Yeah.
And you're just like, nah, they don't hear any of this shit. Let's keep talking.
Yeah.
This could have been over, you know? This could have been it.
Mm-hmm.
But they just, I mean, you got to take a chance, I guess.
Yeah.
You got to be like, look, if we can't talk about it, we're fucked. Let's just talk about it out loud.
Yeah. Oh, it is this episode, actually. You're right. At the end of the very end of this episode is where Mom introduces a new baby and Sister Crone, who's coming to help.
Sister Crone, now your time has come.
Pretty good.
Crone is a black lady.
It's Crone, no?
I thought it was Crone.
It's Crone.
I don't know. Crone. She is the only character with lips in the entire show. I feel weird about her character. Can I just say that?
I'm trying to wait for like, is this racist? Like,
I'm not going to use as heavy a word as that. And I mean, it is like, I have no idea what was in their hearts or whatever, but it's just a little weird.
What's weird about it?
She's sort of like a big, strong, crazy character.
She's like Crazy Eyes.
Who at times.
From Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. And, It's just, I don't know. It's a little weird. She's just depicted as sort of this like out of control, crazy person. And it's weird, right? Because if you show like features of a person of color, in some ways, like you should be faithful to that. You know what I mean? You shouldn't just take like a template of an anime character and, you know, make it darker, make it browner. But it is also just weird where I was kind of like, is this a little bit of like a caricature of a black person?
There's
I'm not saying I have any specific conclusion. I'm just like, I wondered about it.
There seems to be like brown children in this. They're pretty light. Like
Don is a darker skinned kid. Yeah.
So yeah. They have
He looks like Shinji, but they just made him darker.
Like they have some diversity among the kids, but they just look like the same anime character just with like a darker skin tone.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just weird looking at her, especially because she also makes the most like creepy faces, you know, where she gets really close to kids and her eyes are all like horrific and stuff.
Well, but so is mom.
Yeah, like, she's very scary.
They're both scary.
Mom isn't as bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm more scared of mom.
Well, yes, but she doesn't have as detailed and differing faces as Crone does. They really, really amp up the weirditude.
Yeah.
She also talks to a fucked up doll. And
she talks to herself.
As I said, is very, very tall.
And violent.
Yes, and violent.
Scary.
And what did I write down here? Yeah, so part of me, so they talk about how they have to escape, right? Because they don't want to just sit around waiting to be eaten. And part of me was thinking like, I don't know, should they not have just overthrown their, you know, masters and taken the place as a fortress? You know, it can house all 30 plus of you. I mean, yeah, you don't have any idea if like they bring in some like insanely large fucking fortress and just mow you down or something, some sort of, you know, star killer base of demons.
Yeah, you don't know what they're going to do.
At one point, I think it's this episode, maybe it's afterwards, they're talking about the outside world. Yeah, yeah. It's when Rey is like, but Emma, it's too dangerous out there. For all we know, he does another big conclusion where he's like, it's probably a whole demon society out there. I was like, I don't know if that's true. This could still be the regular world, but demons have infiltrated our world and are holding us hostage and are secretly being like, you have to bring me delicious, smart children.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, we all know about that pedophile ring that's in the basement of the pizza restaurant.
Mark.
You know, it's just like that. This is actually a documentary anime.
Stop with your conspiracy theories.
I'm only kidding. But it was weird to me that he's like, you know what, the rest of the world is just demons. It's demons all the way down. And I was like, you know, you have no idea. You don't know.
Like they could
be. He's just trying to be pragmatic. Like that could be the case, and they have to assume the worst.
Yeah.
It's true. But it does also inform... Yeah, I guess so. I was going to say it informs their strategy of leaving the place, but...
No, they definitely should leave. Because the thing is, too, like, even if it's not... Even if it's something different, like, the demons will still know, like, what happened to Mom? Oh, we're not getting our meat anymore. She was supposed to meet us here with the children, and they're not.
Meat.
Like, and they know exactly where... If they stay there, if they, like, just, like, all attack Mom and Sister Crone... Then, you know, they can't stay there. Like, maybe they can do that and then try to escape. But you also don't know, like, what kind of alarming system they have. Maybe if something happens to Mom, there's a thing that alerts the demons.
Oh, shit, she's got a kill switch.
Yeah, you have no idea. So you got to be ready to get the fuck out of there because you don't want to be exactly where they know you are because they can just come back with, like, reinforcements and stuff.
Yeah.
Just
it's
a giant
it's,
demon
it's true,
army attack.
But I also question the, yeah, I don't know, because part of me was thinking they do that. I keep saying that phrase. I was theorizing that they do that. They get rid of these evil nun ladies, and then a few of them break off to explore, you know, and then they come back with a vehicle or something. You know, the idea of just let's take 30 people into the forest seems like a terrible idea. I mean, that's part of the premise, right, is that it's these are insanely... slim odds and we have to overcome that. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's better.
You guys have put a better perspective on it by being like, he's assuming that it could be the worst, not necessarily that it definitely is how it is.
Yeah. And that's the worst possible scenario for them where it's like there actually is nowhere to go. They can't stay there, but they also like there's nowhere for them to go to.
Yeah. I also had a fun thought. I imagined, what if this show like kind of ends and they just jump ahead like 30 years And for whatever reason, things are fine. It's all these humans. They're all the anime characters, but grown up. And they're asking like Emma about her childhood. And she's talking about like, yeah, you know, I was raised on an orphanage. She's like, you know what? Actually, I'm pretty sure that they would send us to demons to be eaten as meat.
You think like she blacks it out?
Oh my God. And there's like just a bunch of flashbacks and then the credits roll. End of show.
Okay.
I don't know why, but that would be the funniest punchline to me is if you just didn't show how anything ended and it was just a really traumatic experience she had to live with. That's episode two.
Yes, that is episode two. And so now episode three is all about the kids trying to figure out where the tracking device is so that they can figure out how to disable it. And
they start with the butt and they don't find it there.
No, they inspect the new baby whose name is Carol. Emma is able to find it. It's a little bug bite on the ear that like heals by the time they grow up. But
it's very convenient they had a baby.
Yeah.
With them, you know what I mean? That you could be like, "Oh, this is a baby and so they must have a new incision."
Well, the baby was there to replace Connie, who was eaten.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess you always start as a baby at the orphanage. They wouldn't bring somebody in who's 3.
Yeah.
Cuz that means, yeah.
They also theorize that there is a place where they prep the like 1-year-olds, you know, like where they prep the infants or whatever.
They tag them and shit.
Yeah, and I wonder like how they make new ones, like what that process is. Is there a separate farm?
That is completely nightmarish to think about.
There's just a separate farm that like inseminates women. That's scary.
Yeah. I have other thoughts I'm not going to say because they're too dark. But anyway.
It's the Matrix.
That's it. That's what it was. Cool. Yeah, they tattoo them. They put in there a tracking device. They, I don't know, murder their parents or whatever. Yeah, so thinking about it, I was like, so the show in some ways reminds me of the show, the anime and media property Higurashi or Higurashi no Naku Koro ni, which is when the cicadas cry. And it's sort of, I don't remember what the premise is too well, but it's got a bunch of little kids that are cute, but then there's also extremely dark moments of violence. And so I was wondering if these kids were going to have to like rip their ears off, like part of their ear, like, you know. Like to get the tracking device off, like it was going to be messy that way. We still don't know.
Yeah, so far from what we've seen, there isn't. I mean, we saw the little kid die. No, we didn't see her. We saw the dead little kid, but there hasn't been any violence, really. It's all been like pretty gore free.
That's true. But just you wait, brother. I think Ray again. Ray or Norman says about the tracking devices. Well, they don't know which one of us is like each tracking device.
Yeah.
Again, where are you getting that information from, dude? You have no idea. The thing in your ear could have some kind of fucking serial number or whatever is stamped. And I do think this show is well written, by the way. I think a lot of the strategy and forethought that the characters have about each other
is
possible. You know, the way they outwit each other. But
yeah, it's like someone really thought about how to imprison 38 orphans.
Yeah, wait.
Harvest them for food.
That's not good. but that's why I poke out these little things because I want to be wrong. I want to be convinced that there is a reason for every leap of logic or seeming leap of logic. But yeah, I do wonder that I was like, you don't know that they're not serialized, right?
Well, it's interesting that Ray is the one who comes up with that too.
Is it Ray that comes up with that?
We'll find out later. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why you say that's interesting, Miles.
Because Ray is a traitor.
Oh, you forgot? Right.
You forgot?
I knew someone was a traitor, but I forgot. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the end of episode four. Right.
And that's why I wanted to keep watching. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, but they're going to do that every time. We couldn't sit there and watch 8 more episodes of anime.
Yes, we could. No. And we didn't because you want to play video games.
Jackie, I also don't want to sit on a sofa
I want to sit on a sofa for 20 hours.
Yeah, well.
Since we've mentioned it already, were you guys suspicious of Ray before that?
He was a little weird.
He's like a goth emo looking kid, so he's very suspicious.
I was suspicious. Yeah. It was the last note I wrote down was, I wonder if Ray is the traitor, like right before.
I thought Norman was evil.
So it's...
Ray seems
She's putting a lot of trust into both of them.
So I mean,
there was the possibility that either of them could not be on her side.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to, right? Like, there's no way you can shoulder this all by yourself.
Yeah.
Or even two of you.
Right.
And they slowly are like, we have to tell the other people.
And it's like, I think it makes sense for them to tell the older kids so that they can get help to bring along the younger kids. Or
yeah, and the younger kids might do something stupid, like just tell, like ask yeah, mom, like, hey, are exactly. we meet by chance? Yeah. They're not smart enough to be deceitful. They're too innocent.
Though even like, I think 11-year-old kids sometimes are kind of too stupid to keep a secret, you know?
Well, yeah, but that's you're not as bad.
I guess.
The older you get, the better a liar you become.
I guess. But I hope they're only telling like the kids that they can trust, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what they're trying to verify now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're jumping ahead. They realize since they love playing tag so much, even though, would you call this, Miles, would you call this more manhunt, what they're doing in the woods?
For sure. It is more manhunt.
Yeah, I never played Manhunt, but kids would talk about it, and they would try to explain the rules to me. And basically, Manhunt...
It's like hide-and-seek plus tag.
It's like a hide-and-seek, larger-scale right. tag game that you play, hopefully in a large place like the woods or something as kids, and you don't get leeches if you can.
I used to play with my neighbors, and I would just go home.
And they would never find you.
Like, why? Just out, right. out of boredom, or...?
I would be like, you know what? I don't really want to hide anymore. I just want... I'm done with this.
That's so fucking rude. Those kids were out there for hours being like, where did he go? I hope he's okay.
Probably.
Well, did you ever say like goodbye to them when you moved or became an adult or anything?
No. Or do they think
they just lost you in the woods one day and that's it?
Yeah, probably.
That's crazy, man. I have a note here that there's a... Oh, wait. No, sorry. During their... They decide to use Manhunt, their tag game, as a way to kind of train everybody because if they're and seeing who's strong enough, just kind of getting a feel for everyone's physical ability because when they leave, they're going to have to leave through a forest.
And mental ability too, because it's also, they're also teaching them, the kids, to strategize.
Strategize and how to work as like separate cells, you know, mm-hmm. like army units and stuff. Mm-hmm. We see them in the forest giving like military hand signals about mm-hmm. how one squad should break off to the right or whatever.
Well, because then they get the idea of doing it in teams.
Yeah, which is a lot better. You can't roll 36 people deep.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
So that answers that question. And they play really cool, funky music during this training sequence. I meant to look it up because I enjoyed it. There's a child named Thoma or Tama. It's like Thomas with no S. Don't know what that's about.
Thoma.
Yeah. And then I think you were going to say what happens next in the plot.
Well, I want to talk about how, you know, Sister Crone, we get to see the side of it from the adults who are harvesting these children. And, you know, mom talks to Sister Crone and is like, you know, you just got to watch these kids. Don't worry about it. And we learn that mom is like a very highly respected mom. And there's like mom is a role that you play to be like the head of the farm. And it's a highly coveted role. Sister Crone aspires to be a mom one day. And so she's highly respected. She's like one of the youngest women to become a mom in this context, to assume that role. And her farm is highly successful. The meat is very good quality. It's under control. It's producing better quality than other farms. We also learned that because mom talks back to demon headquarters. So
talking about mom, right? She runs this orphanage that's secretly a farm or whatever. She's the only connection I found for voice actors who are also in JoJo.
Who is she?
She is the girl, the Egyptian, I guess, woman, Melina.
Oh.
Who takes, no, the not the, the one that is dating Whole Horse, the one who takes care of little Polnareff when he becomes a fucking baby.
Okay.
So it's like interesting that it's like, you know, she plays
she got to step up on this role. This
these
is a good
lady
role.
Characters that are good around children.
Mm.
What's the deal with that?
Call it that, sure.
Do you think these two... It's interesting to think about the two adults because they're in some ways like the most evil people because they're betraying their own race in service of these demons. But in a way, they're probably also forced into it somehow. So I'd be curious to find out like what their underlying motivations are.
I think it's got to be self-preservation. Like they're like, you know, options for adults in this world. Like, if you're not food, then you're like, right. you're ahead of a farm, you know? So probably they're like, well, I don't want to die, and so I'd rather live this life of murdering children.
But these two look like they enjoy it, because, I mean, it wouldn't be as fun to watch if we saw like that these women feel like regretful and they have like a drinking problem because they have to black out the you know, awareness of how evil they are or something nuanced like that. Mm-hmm. These women look like they enjoy growing children to eat.
Maybe they were chosen from, because I mean, the kids do theorize that they kind of figure out like, oh, there might be somebody who is a traitor. I don't know how they figure that out. That's a very smart thing to figure out. But they figure out like, oh, there might be one of the kids that is actually like an agent for mom, and they're actually watching us, because that would be the most convenient for mom if like she had a spy among us.
I forget why they think that. I think something does tip them off.
I think they are kind of like, it's kind of weird that mom isn't watching us very closely, and like neither is Sister Crone. So they're like, there must be something watching us that you know, that is not meant to raise suspicion. And that's why they think that there must be a kid watching them. And I think one of them theorizes that in order to keep this whole thing going, they probably select children to be kind of part, like, in on it. And eventually, like, those kids get to, they're rewarded by growing up to be adults, you know?
Yeah, or maybe that's what they're told. And in reality,
or maybe it's what
all
told,
the adult
yeah.
selection, the mama selection happens outside in demon society.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids are just going to get betrayed and eaten or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, we learn, so Sister Crone really wants to be a mom, and so she kind of comes up with her own little scheme where she's like, oh, I can just rat on mom because mom isn't reporting this. I can find the kids myself, I can rat on her and be a snitch, and then they'll make me a mom, which is like kind of logical.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that we find out from this monologue that there are channels for this kind of thing where you should report what happened, but Isabella, the main mama, has not done so.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, this anime seems to take place in the year 2045, and all of the episode names seem to just be dates in a day, month, year format, because they all end in 45, and they go 10 and 11. At one point, when they're kind of figuring out how this whole society works, in one of the early episodes, they say something like, well, they wouldn't have da-da-da-da-da in 2015.
Mm.
And I don't remember what that's in reference to. It almost sounds like that's when the orphanage started, or I don't know if one of the caretakers mentioned that year, or is 30 years old or something.
Yeah, I think they're talking about the technology.
Yeah, there was something about it. I was like, was there supposedly an end of the world they were told about that happened? That's a bit of a mystery to me. Maybe I just misunderstood something. Yeah, so we do see that, like, Sister Crone, though, she does end up playing Manhunt with the kids, you know, probably because she wants to assess their abilities herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she is extremely fast. I mean, in part because she's an adult, for God's sake.
Yeah, an adult is always going to be faster than a kid because they have bigger legs.
Yeah, and she captures most of them in a game of Manhunt. And but we still have at least two, I think. What, like Norman?
Oh, the kids
and Emma?
That win are, no, Norm and Ray end up winning the
right.
The boys win the game,
which,
because they're not caught.
Right, which is in some ways maybe what she wanted, because by identifying the kids who are very skilled, like, it's possible they've thought the most about this or they're the most dangerous.
I don't know if that really, but I think she was already suspecting them.
Yeah,
because they're older and they're smart.
It's true. Yeah, and then it's Ep 4? When does Mama put the kibosh on Crone's plans to usurp her?
Episode 4, Mama says, you know, if you behave, I'll make sure you become a mom, but don't step out of line or you're going to be fucked up or something.
Everybody's playing everybody in this crazy demon world.
And then Sister Crone goes back to her room and rips the head off her little baby toy that she's been talking to.
Yeah.
And she curses mom and she screams and she's being very loud. And then I wrote down, this is a good Mother's Day show.
Because of course it is. So they talk. Sorry.
Yeah, then this is where they think about, like, okay, let's play tag in teams, and let's, why don't we tell Don and Glinda they can help us.
Gilda, not Glinda.
Glinda is the good witch. Gilda is just another name. I don't know anyone with that name. But yeah, that's like, let's tell these other two kids they can help us, like, make sure the kids are safe. And then that's when they are like, oh, what if they're informants? And Norman has a plan. He's like, oh, I'll figure it out. I'm going to tell Don this. Like, I'm going to tell Don that the rope is hidden here. I'm going to tell Gilda that the rope is hidden here. And then depending on, you know, like, you know, whatever, whatever. And then, yeah. And but he's telling this to Ray. So he's probably telling Ray something completely different than what he told Don. Yeah,
well, he's going to tell these two kids different things and see which information makes it up to Mama. Basically, if they see Mama go to check under the bed. Then the kid they told the rope was under the bed is there. And then Ray says, well, what if they go to look and there's nothing there?
Yeah.
And he said, I have a plan for that too. And then we don't see what he was talking about. And then I don't really understand what happened here.
Why? What don't you understand?
Don't we see Gilda go to Mama with a note? Or is that really Ray and the hair?
No, we don't see anyone. Like, the note, she sees the note, but we're not sure who it is from.
It slides under the door.
They make it look like it's Gilda, but we never see Gilda do it.
Yeah, they make it look like it's Gilda. Like, you see Gilda leave the room. You see her walk down the hallway, and then you see a note slide under Mama's door. And so you're assuming that's what she's doing. Like, she's the one who put the note. But
it's the Kuleshov effect.
It might not be her. What she does end up doing, and we do see her do, is she goes to Sister Crone's room and she's like, leave me alone. And, you know, you don't have to check in on me anymore. I'm fine. And Sister Crone is like, ah, so Emma told you everything. Listen to me, child, you know, whatever, whatever. And Crone is like telling her all this. Like, she doesn't reveal anything, but Gilda is like, listen, lady, I don't know what you're talking about. Can you shut the fuck up and leave me alone? And Sister Crone whispers to her, if you think that Emma's lying, come back to me and I'll help you out.
Okay.
What?
That makes way more sense, because I had no idea what the fuck was going on. I thought Gilda slipped a note under the door to Mama in the other room. So I was like, what is happening? This is like 12th dimension chess. I don't understand.
What I thought might have been happening there, because I did also think that Gilda slipped the note. I thought maybe she trusts Mama, but she doesn't trust Sister Crone. So she was like, Crone, you leave me the fuck alone, but
yeah,
I'm going to tell
Mama. Yeah, because that's what I kind of thought too, because they play against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that I was thinking
about. What did you think, Miles?
I got it, okay?
You knew that wasn't her slipping the note?
I mean, I figured it out pretty... I figured it wasn't her as soon as she made her confession. I was like, okay, so somebody else slipped that note. And yeah. I am still not 100% sure it's Ray, because we haven't gone into the reasoning of why Norman accuses him at the end of this episode.
We'll get there.
Yeah, this could be another chess move where he accuses Ray so that someone else listening breathes a sigh of relief.
I think I know why.
And thinks that they're, you know, that kind of thing. But one thing I should have mentioned we missed is when they're playing Manhunt with Sister Crone, when she finds Emma and she knows she's like behind a tree or in a bush or something, she says to her in a way that like only they can hear, she says something where she explicitly like reveals kind of what it is, where she says something like, if you think you're going to be eaten or whatever, like, let me know and I can help you. I can be a friend to you. She says something like explicitly about like the monsters or being eaten.
Yeah.
Something that you would only know about if you were told about it or you ventured off the grounds.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't go into it. Emma does not respond to it. Like, what? You know?
Yeah. It seems like if they didn't already know the secret, Sister Crone is spilling the secret left and right.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess Mama feels like the secret's definitely there, like someone knows it and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but Crone is being a rogue, because Crone is not supposed to be doing any of this. She's not supposed to acknowledge
it. Yeah, but
it
I'm saying maybe she picked up that vibe from talking to Mama.
Picked up what vibe?
The vibe that the kids already know.
No, she knows that some of the kids know, but her instructions are you just watch the kids.
Okay.
Don't try to get in the middle of anything.
Yeah.
Mama has a plan.
Right. But I'm just saying that, yeah, she wasn't going rogue and...
she was going rogue. That's
no,
absolutely
I know,
going
I know,
rogue.
I know. But I thought you meant that by even mentioning that, like, she was going rogue and assuming that some of the children really knew about the, the way the world works.
I think she shouldn't be like, without knowing for certain that the kids know something, she shouldn't be talking about it explicitly like that, because you never know. You could be tipping the kids off.
Right. And then in which case, if they come to you later and say, like, what's all this about demons and eating? You're not going to know if they actually got the info from someone. It's harder to trace. Or if they just heard you flapping your gums about it.
Yeah. Yeah. They can, like, someone can just mention it and mama will be like, what? And be like, I don't know. Sister Crone keeps talking about demons all the time. I don't know what her deal is.
Yeah. And so the episode ends with, oh, wait, what is this? Oh, so I thought it was Gilda, you know, for a while of the episode. And I wrote down that the rope thing, I thought that was good deception. It was sort of like in The Departed where they're like, give some info to people,
mm-hmm.
you know, to find the rat in this organization.
It's
give some info and see what comes out.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's good. That's a good, you know, counter espionage sort of thinking there.
Yeah.
And when they, because I thought it was Gilda when he, when we see Gilda like lie in bed after talking to Sister Crone or whatever, I imagine that scene in Full Metal Jacket where the one soldier is fucking everything up for the other guys. So they all just in the middle of the night go to his bunk bed with like bars of soap in their socks and they just beat him down silently. And I thought maybe something like that was going to happen to Gilda, because I was like, what are they going to do with the traitor anyway?
Mm-hmm.
At some point, Emma's like, even if someone tried to betray us, I would take them with us. Because, you know, everyone deserves to survive and blah, 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 blah.
And she also said that, like, you know, there's no guarantee that the spy is actually safe when, you know, when they escape and stuff. So they're like, I'd rather drag them with us to make sure that they get safe. Like, we're all siblings. We're all good people. Like, we all grew up together. Even if somebody was tricked into doing something or manipulated or whatever, like, they're still our siblings and we should save them, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, it's a good hearted thing of her to do. I don't know that I agree, but,
I understand the reasoning.
I understand the reasoning as well. And I might agree, but thank God I don't have to be in that position.
Do you agree, Miles?
Or do you feel like leave the spy?
I would have a hard time walking away from anyone I grew up with.
Mm.
Makes sense.
Like, I don't know, but there's 38 kids. Maybe you don't get along with everyone.
Yeah. I would take the spy with us, but I would cut out their tongue, I think. I think that's my compromise. You know? So then I'm like, now you can't share our secrets.
Oh my God. That's not nice. But you'll like live. That.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to get your hands dirty, even in your mind. Anyway, the episode ends with Norman being like, it's not Gilda. Despite the, you know, order of the shots making the audience think it is.
He says it's, no, Ray is like, oh, so it must be Dawn. And Norman is like, actually, it's you.
Ah. Right. And then it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good. It's a gripping kind of mystery slash survival thing. And it's also kind of the framework for any show, any work about revolution, right? About a coup, overthrowing a you know, oppressive system that you live in, where you have to kind of not leak any information, but you have to organize people without letting the powers that be know what's going on, and you have to figure out how are you going to survive in the world when you don't have any masters anymore, when you're just your own thing.
It reminds me a lot of also The Handmaid's Tale, because it's kind of like what they have to do. They have to like still play the game, like pretend they're going along with it. Meanwhile, they're organizing like an underground escape or something. Also, it also reminded me, isn't there a Holocaust movie where they like the dad tells a little kid like they're playing a game, but they're really like in the Holocaust?
Whoa.
You don't know about that movie?
Maybe, maybe not.
There's a movie where Miles, do you know this movie?
I do not.
Okay, there's a movie where there's like a dad and his son in a concentration camp.
Like the Nazi Holocaust? Like the Jews and other minorities? Yes,
there's a dad, there's a dad and his little son in a concentration camp. And so like in order to like not freak his kid out and like he tells the kid that they're actually playing a game and like that's why they have
to do. Are you talking about Life is Beautiful?
I think so, yes.
Oh.
Oh.
I've never seen that. I think that won an Oscar.
I would see it again. I saw it, I think, a long time ago, and I don't really remember it. Yeah. But it kind of reminds. Too. But this kind of reminds me of that, because they have to, like, you know, the best way to get these kids to go along with you is to tell them that this is just like to kind of lie to them and tell them that it's actually something nice and not something scary, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a spoonful of sugar helps the survivalism go down.
But do you guys, it sounded like you guys didn't understand how Ray is the spy, but I get it. Do you guys not get it?
I don't. No.
Because Ray is the only one who was actually told about where the rope was, right?
They never told Don.
I think there was just a third thing that he left out, because when we see Norman explaining what he did, he's telling this to Ray.
Yep.
So I think that he never actually tells anybody what he told anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I think he told Don something. He told Gilda something. He
gave them fake information, although this was all fake info.
And he told
yeah.
Ray that he told them things that are different than what he actually told them.
Right.
So you can also see who Ray was going to frame, you know, because like Ray, like he ended up deciding to frame.
Okay.
Don. You know, frame.
I didn't
Don.
Even think about the framing aspect, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So it's like, not only are you a traitor, but why Don, man?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You should slip a note that's like, it's either here or here.
Why not
Gilda?
Here.
Yeah. Gilda's, you know, she talks to Sister Crone all the time. Can we trust her? Yeah. No so way. It's an interesting show. It was not what I thought. I just remember reading it because I avoid spoilers. It was about like an orphanage or something. I thought it was going to be like really sad and sweet. I said to Jackie, I was like, yeah, this one's about orphans. Maybe it's sad.
It is sad. It's scary.
In a completely different way than I thought. I thought it would be like grounded and realistic and you know, all that. Instead, it's like, wow, what if this crazy shit existed? Yeah, it's fun. So we'll probably keep watching.
We will keep watching. Mark, if all you don't keep watching, I'm going to watch it by
myself.
That's
fine. I just didn't want that to happen before we recorded.
Just release me from having to wait for you.
Well, we already recorded the podcast episode.
Okay.
So you are released.
No, I'm not released, because do you want me to watch it with you?
Yeah.
Okay, my laptop's going to die. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Miles.
See you next week, everybody.
See ya. Well, wait, I just want to say, yeah, feel free to email us, jojosbizarrepod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @JJBpod and consider becoming a patron on patreon.com/JJBpod. Have a great life. Stay away from things that eat you. Good night.
Good night.